Welcome back to Behavioral Science for Brands, a podcast where Richard and I go deep into behavioral science and find the practical applications for marketing. We've made it a little mission of ours to make sure that behavioral science can be easily used for brand marketers and agencies today. Today, we're highlighting Costco, one of America's great companies, and we're going to talk loyalty cards, ski trips, and the sunk cost effect. My name is Michael Aaron Flicker.
And I'm Richard Chilton.
Let's get into it. So, Richard, Costco is an idea that's born from two visionary entrepreneurs, James Sinegal and Jeffrey Brotman. And it's the late 1970s, and they see a business that's starting to flourish that's called Price Club. And they have this idea at Price Club that they're going to serve small businesses with really steep discounts, and they're going to offer discounts because it's a membership only retail store, grocery store. So the founders of Costco say, what if we do the same model, but we extend it to also to families and to individuals? So they come up with the name of Costco, which is a combination of cost and stock, to say that we can get large stocks at fair prices. And they opened Costco 1983, first ones in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah. I'm questioning their spelling. How is
some flair that they've added. Very yes. And the concept for Costco is so unique in 1983 because unlike traditional grocery stores of the time where they have end caps and they have large displays and it's really about the variety of brands, at Costco they decide one or two brands in a category, no fancy end caps, no fancy displays. It's all about bare bones shopping experience, but the very best prices. This has propelled Costco to be one of the world's largest retailers today. They have 100 million members worldwide of Costco. In fiscal year 2020, they did over $166 billion in sales, and they have almost 275,000 employees. So Costco has really created a whole category in how it's grown. And part of the success story is behavioral science. So whether you've shopped and enjoyed the products of Costco or you're learning about Costco for the first time on this podcast, there's a lot powering the success of this brand. Certainly, the membership and the super low prices is one thing that has propelled them to such growth. But they're using a lot of behavioral science, too. We talked about a few of them before the episode started today. You want to start with the sunk cost effect?
Yeah, one of the key things Costco do is make everyone who goes there pay a membership fee. So you have to pay a membership fee if you want to go and get these great discounts. That taps into a long-standing behavioral science idea called the sunk cost effect. So the original study is a 1985 study run by Hal Arcs, the University of Ohio. And he recruits a group of people and asks them to imagine they have bought a ski trip. So they've spent $100, it's a ski trip to Michigan, and they're going to have a good time if they go on that ski trip. Later on, they buy another weekend ski trip. This time it's in Wisconsin. It's going to be amazing, and it's costing $50.
Less money, but a much better experience.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Final thing he says is you then realize the trips are on the same weekend. You can only go on one. You cannot get your money back for either, so the money's gone, you're not getting it back. Which, he asked people, would you pick to go on? Now, if people were behaving completely logical, everyone should want to go on the amazing ski trip rather than the good ski trip.
The amazing ski trip at $50.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that is not what happens. The slight majority, about 54% of people, pick the expensive good ski trip rather than the cheap amazing ski trip. He calls this the sunk cost effect. And it's essentially the argument that we hate the idea of past spends being wasted. Even if it's gone, even if that money's never coming back, we go to illogical lengths to try and avoid a sense of waste. And that's what Costco do so brilliantly. Once you've bought that membership card, let's imagine you're thinking about where to shop for a weekend. You could get your trolley of goods cheaper at Walmart. The sunk cost argument would say you will go to Costco and pay a bit more to illogically make you feel like you haven't wasted that.
That membership fee. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a really great example of where classical economics and behavioral economics kind of come to a head.
Classical economics would argue you would try and maximize your utility. So the argument from classical economics would be you would go on the great ski trip,
yes.
The amazing ski trip.
Got it.
What we're saying here is people behave illogically. Rather than trying to maximize their utility going forward and going on that amazing ski trip, they pick the suboptimal version that costs more.
Got it.
So what we're seeing here is the difference between maybe classical economics that says how people should behave if they are completely rational decision makers. Behavioral science, though, isn't interested in what people should do. It's interested in how they actually behave. And suddenly, once you recognize these insights, you as a business have an amazing opportunity to maximize your profit and become more successful. So the argument here would be learn from Costco and think, how can I get people to make down payments? How can I get people to pay a subscription? How can I get people to buy membership fees? If you do that, it will affect their behavior in seemingly irrational ways.
Yeah, because they will feel that connection to you as a brand, effectively increasing loyalty.
Exactly. Yeah. That will be the output.
Yeah. So if you're Costco, or maybe a more modern example, Amazon Prime, this is a thing that you can really use, a tactic that seems so easily and readily available. But not every brand is going to be able to offer a loyalty program or some recurring fee to increase stickiness. So is this more just a thought experiment for those brands, or is there a way that we can take this learning and apply it to them?
I think most brands can apply this principle. So if you have an e-commerce site, you can definitely take some principles from certain cost effects to boost your impact. There's a very related study by a Columbia Business School psychologist called Rand Kivitz. And he ran two studies in this area. First one was with car washes. Second one was with coffee shops, and they both have the same findings. Let's just focus on the coffee shops. Some people go into the coffee shop and they are given a loyalty card with, say, 8 blank spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And each time they buy a coffee, they get the spaces stamped.
Mm-hmm.
And once they fill up the card, they get a free coffee. Next group of people who come into the shop, they are given a loyalty card with, say, 10 blank spaces, which they have to fill to get their freebie. But this time, the barista stamps the first two. Mm. So again, from a classical economics perspective, from a logical perspective, both of these groups have the same requirement. They both need to get another 8 purchases to get their freebie. So you would think, logically, that they will behave in a similar manner. But that is not what Kivitz found. Kivitz found that people who felt like they had started their journey, people who'd had those 2 stamps, they were more likely to complete the cards, and they did so quicker. Now, that was called the illusion of progress. If you feel like you've started a journey, you're more likely to finish it. And I think you can relate that very much back to sunk costs again. People don't want to feel like those 2 stamps were wasted.
Mm.
So yes, Costco talks about membership fees, but I think you can apply the Kivitz study in many different ways in terms of e-commerce and UX.
Yeah, I mean, if you just think about ways to apply it, if you're doing a longer sign-up process or a longer application, showing the progress bar across the top.
Exactly. Exactly.
An example of how to show progress and get that illusion of progress as you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And making things salient is super important. Don't just rely on the fact people have done 3 or 4 steps. Remind them, make it blatant in terms of your design.
And so often you have 2 ways to show progress. You've accomplished 12% or you have 88% to go, showing that you are reducing the amount you have to go. Would that help with the illusion of progress?
Yeah, and the other way might be, you know, rather than starting saying, well, you've put in your card details, you've put in your address, that's your second step. What you could put is, well, the first step is you've selected an item. You could reframe.
You're already down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're already down the road. And another way, tell me if you agree with this, that you could apply it would be by starting with easier questions and then getting harder later. Because if I answer easy questions, like you said, I already selected the product and it's in the cart. I've already answered my name, my phone number, my email. Those easier steps get done it makes me feel the illusion is that I've gotten further down the field.
So let's say you are onboarding a B2B client. You've got to ask them 10 questions. Some are super simple, name, address. Some are complex, like, you know, go and get your tax ID VAT number. What the Kivitz experiment would suggest is if you put a complex question at the beginning, you're putting a big hurdle up, and many times people might just say, well, I can't be bothered, and walk away. If you get them to put their name in, then you get them to put the phone number. You put these really simple tasks in. By the time they hit that large hurdle, they feel like they've invested time and effort, and they are more motivated to push through the final area. So even the sequencing of questions can learn from the illusion of progress.
Yeah. I think what we're interested in here from the behavioral science angle, how can we get them to finish? What is the way to get the action that we want done here? And so by reordering the questions, we make it much more likely we're going to get to a completed application.
Tiny little tweaks, big effects.
Yeah. So let's take a break here. And when we come back, we can talk more about Costco and some other behavioral science that they're using to great effect.
Behavioral Science for Brands is brought to you by Function Growth, AdAge's newcomer agency of the year. Function Growth uses behavioral science to supercharge growth for direct-to-consumer brands. Delivering a wide spectrum of services, they are the one-stop shop for brands with high growth potential. Tired of agencies that make money when you don't? Function Growth's shared risk and reward model means they only make money when your brand grows. Discover how Function Growth can unlock the power of behavioral science to accelerate growth for your brand today.
Welcome back to Behavioral Science for Brands, where Richard Schotten and I have been spending time talking Costco, talking behavioral science. You know, Richard, during the break, I was thinking about the example of the loyalty card that you gave, where the barista makes two stamps. And it was a compelling example, but part of me was saying, did it win because the barista kind of gave me something for free? Like, it kind of got me down the road?
I think that's a fair challenge. And I think you could give two explanations for that finding. The first is the one that the academic argues, the illusion of progress.
Yep.
If we feel we have expended some effort, we are more likely to want to continue that journey and finish it.
Right.
But you also mentioned a really good point, which is many, many cultures, in fact, there is an argument every single culture on the earth is affected by a bias called reciprocity.
Mm.
So the idea that if someone does you a favor, you are obliged to return that favor. In fact, and I don't know if this is true in American, but in British English, my parents' generation would have rather than say thank you, they would have literally said much obliged. You know, we would have in our language shown that there was this sense of you've done me a favor, I need to return it. So psychologists call this reciprocity. And it's not just speculation and linguistic analysis. There are some lovely, simple studies that help support this. So my favourite is one from Armin Falk at the University of Bonn. And he worked with a third world charity, and they send out over 9,000 letters asking people to donate. Sometimes there is just a plea, we really need your funds. Other times, people get the same letter, same text, same content, but they are given a free postcard. And it says something on the lines, a gift from the children of Dhaka, Bangladesh. And what he finds is that the proportion of people that respond positively and give a donation goes up by 17% in that second scenario.
Yeah.
So he says this is reciprocity. The charity has done you a favor. You feel an obligation as a decent, kind member of society to return that favor. And more people gave money. And when he looked at the size of the donation, that was increased in the reciprocity condition.
And this is so relevant for Costco, because if you've ever been in Costco.
I've never been.
You've never been?
No.
Growing up, we had a membership. Yeah. And when you walk through the aisles, there's free sampling all over the store. And so you're walking down the aisle and here's a free bagel bite. Here's a piece of chicken. Here's a pizza. And you taste it. And right next to where the tasting is, you can buy the food item. It's a pretty compelling experience when you taste something and you can buy it and take it home right then.
Yeah, that is a perfect example, I think, of applying reciprocity. Once you've taken that bagel bite, that pick of chicken, there's a little bit of you feel guilty if you don't go on to buy it. So a small cost gets a significant revenue from Costco's perspective.
And Costco has really mastered this art. 2 billion samples in 2022. They gave over 2 billion free samples away. They say, which has led to massive sales increases on those items. And just out of interest, number one thing that they sampled, any guess?
Whenever you say sample, I imagine someone with cocktail sticks and bits of cheese. So yeah. I'm going to go, is it cheese?
No, but it's a good guess. Yeah. Rotisserie chicken. Chicken was the number one most sampled food at Costco.
We could have been here a long time and I wouldn't have guessed that.
But it's really a human insight, as you say, that in almost every culture, when you receive, you feel the desire to give back.
Yeah, there's an ethnographer called, I think it's Marcel Mauss or Mauss anyway.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book called The Gift. And he's looking at society, specific islanders, people who live in the Amazonian jungle. All societies, he argued, have this sense where if you're given a gift, there is an obligation to think about how you then return that favor. I find this fascinating, that it's a insight that unites us all as people.
Yeah. It's really something that you can imagine almost every business, almost every brand finding a way to do this. So really widely applicable, and just have to find the right way for your brand to do it, even if you're not in a brick and mortar store.
One of the brands I really like who does this, and I don't think this is a widespread brand in the US, so it's Pret A Manger. They are a company set up, maybe 30 years ago, sell sandwiches, coffee. There's a few in New York.
I think there's about 30 in the US, and how many in the UK?
Oh, gosh. I mean, not
thousands.
Maybe, maybe not thousands, but loads. I mean, it's a massive, and everyone would have heard of Pret.
Yeah.
They took a slightly different approach to the whole loyalty card scheme. Rather than asking people to collect 10 stamps and then be given a free coffee, which kind of feels a little bit transactional.
Yeah,
it's
it
a
sure
little
does.
Bit, you know, I deserve the coffee. I've done my end of the bargain. You owe me this coffee. What Pret did was empower their staff to give out randomly 1 in 10 coffees. And the impact that has is wildly different from the transactional loyalty scheme. If you're given a free coffee, you feel top of the world. You feel like you've been picked for your, you know, kindness and decency. So I think taking the finding and applying it a slightly different way can make it much more powerful.
You know, the thing that connects for me is also this can be a premiumizing effect. I was reading last week about loyalty programs. All airlines have loyalty programs.
Yeah.
Many hotel chains have loyalty programs, and the exchanges at like the punch of a coffee card. Fly our airline, stay in our hotel room nights, and in exchange get free things, get free trips, and get free hotel nights. Except the most premium hotel brands in America do not do this. Four Seasons, the Aman Resorts, they say there's not a loyalty program, there's a recognition program, and that their customers would more prefer when you walk in to know who they are. To know their preferences to know their allergies, to know what types of bedding they want is much more important to their clientele than a free night hotel stay. So I think there's also an opportunity to see this reciprocity, not always as free gifts, but in giving recognition, you also get something in return. You get a higher level of connection to the brand.
I really like that. And that principle of, you know, we've got these experiments and they tell us a finding. But then it's incumbent on us as marketers and advertisers to think, well, how can I take that basic insight and then apply it in a way that is spot on for my brand?
Yeah.
And people should have fun with it. They shouldn't treat these experiments as sacrosanct. Think about
jumping off points.
Yeah, jumping off points, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Richard, we always like to wrap up as we come to the end. Can you give us a little reminder of the big topics we hit today?
So we've talked about three experiments today.
Yes.
We've talked about the sunk cost effect. Remember, that was the ski trip discussion by Hal Arcs. It's the idea that if you can get people to buy a membership fee but pay for a subscription, once they've done that, they will look for, or they'll go to inordinate lengths to use your product afterwards. They will behave illogically to make sure they don't feel like they've wasted the spend. Second principle we talked about was the illusion of progress. That was the coffee loyalty card example. If people feel they have started a journey, it motivates them to get to the end. So you as a marketer have to think of ways of how can I reframe the current situation to make people feel that they have already progressed in some way.
Yes.
And then the third and final example is this really widespread finding of reciprocity. If we have been given a gift, we feel a strong social obligation to return that favor. So from Costco to Pret, think how can you take that basic insight and apply it to your brand?
Amazing. Amazing. So as we come to a close here, let's think about our shopping, our grocery shopping experience. What's the thing when Richard Schotten goes shopping that you most look, your indulgent grocery choice, the thing that you buy that you can only buy every once in a while, the thing that's most fun and indulgent for you?
Oh, well, the thing that I probably get most excited about, this is just a recent fad, kimchi. I'm loving the kind of spicy fermented pickles. That's something I look forward to getting.
Oh, those are delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. And for me, Oreos. They're not an everyday dessert, but they're one of my favorite. So, and you don't find them anywhere but the grocery store.
Nice.
Thanks for joining us today. We've gone through a lot of interesting applications of behavioral science for Costco, but more importantly, we talked about how they could apply to your brands. As you're listening, please drop us a line. Reach out if you have questions. Let us know what you thought of the episode. And we'll be back every other week with new, exciting, interesting topics to discuss. Until then, I'm Michael Aaron Flicker.
And I'm Richard Shelton.